Hello, Americans. I'm Paul Harvey. You know what the news is. In half a minute, you're going to hear the rest of the story.
It's a grand union of super values this week at your local Grand Union supermarket. Choose from USDA choice shells of beef, Western grain-fed pork chops, or fresh Purdue chicken parts, all specially priced. And redeem your super bonus coupon from the Grand Union newspaper ad on High C. High C fruit drinks have all the flavors your family loves, and there's a day's worth of vitamin C in every 6-ounce glass. The 46-ounce can is just 29 cents with coupon and a $7.50 purchase or more at all Grand Union supermarkets in the greater New York area.
Among the myriad characters who parade through everyone's book of high school memories, there's at least one Al Konigsberg. Today we'd call Al a jock, maybe a super jock. Years ago at New York's Midwood High, he left the hard study and the good grades to the academically inclined in order to concentrate on sports, baseball, boxing. Yes, everybody has known at least one Al Konigsberg. In fact, you know this Al Konigsberg. In a moment, the rest of the story. Now from International Harvester, some good news about America's trucking industry. Many happy returns. Now, to a politician, that means one thing. To a trucker, it means return loads. It's no small trick, you know, to make sure that trucks that go outloaded come back loaded. To save fuel, to reduce traffic, the modern trucker uses computer networks to plan routes and times and tonnages so that Americans don't have to pay the cost of operating empty trucks. Coming or going, America's trucks carry their load. And as you go on your way today, the next truck you pass along the way, think, thanks. Remember back in high school, the fellow who was so good with his fists that he never had to use them? He was lean and powerful, had lightning-like reflexes, and yet your good grades were as bewildering to him as his athletic prowess was to you. Well, many years ago at Midwood High in New York, this prototypical character went by the name of Al Konigsberg. When was it? Freshman year. Al strode over to the baseball diamond after school to watch the team practice. And at first, the others paid little attention to him, but after a while, somebody asked if he'd like to try out. Al smiled, said nothing, picked up a bat, approached home plate. The youthful pitcher grinned at this apparent overconfidence and wound up for his most devastating fastball. Al's muscles tensed. The ball was released, and a split second later, the bat cracked against it, sent the ball sailing over the left field fence. And it went on like that all afternoon. The team's coach just shook his head in amazement as they tested Al in every position. He could run bases like the wind. He could shag grounders and whip them out like a machine. There seemed to be no limit to what Al could do. Combining power and speed with fantastic coordination, Al would not stop with baseball. There was a whole world of sports that Al was free to explore without fear of inadequacy. Al was making a daily pilgrimage to the playing field or to the gym, and meanwhile his parents were making another frequent pilgrimage to the principal's office. Because Al had not improved in his academic courses. And the principal routinely informed mother and dad the boy's grades ranged from below average to way below average. Perhaps if he could just get his mind off sports for a while. But that was the hard part, getting Al's mind off sports. You can imagine the commotion in the Konigsberg household when Al announced that he was going to try out for Golden Gloves. He explained his high school athletic coach's enthusiasm over his future as a boxer. Indeed, Al was already whipping the pants off every other challenger at Midwood High, and that's when Mom put her foot down. Her son was not going to be a boxer, nor was she to be the mother of some muscle-headed dunce who lived only to get his face bashed in. Al was, on the other hand, going to forget about this foolishness. He was going to buckle down. He was going to graduate high school. He was going to attend college, whether he liked it or not. Poor Al did the best to please his folks. He did give up boxing. He did manage to scrape through high school. He did enter college, even though failing grades would put a bachelor's degree beyond his reach. And surely Al's athletic coaches were dismayed to watch a natural talent fall by the wayside, for in the choice between academics and athletics, Al had abandoned something that he could do for something he could not do, and yet you've heard of him. You know Al Konigsberg, though not as an athlete, and not as a scholar exactly. For you see, a youthful obsession with sports and a general apathy toward textbooks had cloaked a brilliance which could not register on a report card. Today, Al's image is completely contrary to the one you've just heard, perhaps in part because once upon a time, his admonishing parents recognized a potential that not even he could see. The baseball diamond, or maybe the boxing ring, certainly lost Al Konigsberg, but the performing arts gained a superstar, a writer and a comic who, through two decades of comedy, has characterized himself as the classic 97-pound weakling, Alan Stewart Konigsberg. You know him as Woody Allen. Only now you know the rest of the story.
E.G. Marshall, your host for another story of the macabre. The word itself, macabre, suggests the unusual, the bizarre, the unexplainable. And the source of these stories of the macabre is you. Because each of us has been afraid of something, real or imagined, awake or in a nightmare. Did Laura Veer, who lives in Chatham on Cape Cod, imagine what happened to her? Or was it a real experience? Her husband, Will, middle-aged and semi-retired, was skeptical.
Laura, it just doesn't make sense.
All the same, it's true, Will. I know exactly what those bequests are. What Min will leave for her daughter and a distant cousin, me, Dr. Regan.
How could you possibly know that?
She was here and she told me.
She could not have been here. And you know that as well as I.
Mystery drama The Red Circle was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Roy Windsor and stars Anne Petoniak and Robert Dryden. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and General Electric Citizen Band Radios. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Once upon a time, there was a couple who needed a car.
Honey, we need a car.
My shoes have had it.
They wanted a sensible car because they were sensible people.
We're sensible people.
We save string.
We buy bonds.
We brush regularly.
We hang up our clothes.
But they also wanted a car that was fun because they liked a good time.
Anybody for a quick game of fish?
Oh, cold glass of milk and you're on.
Well, knowing how hard it is to find a car that is both sensible and fun, they went straight to their Buick dealer, whom they knew to be a most reliable source for such cars.
Say, you wouldn't have...
Of course he would.
At which point, the dealer introduced them to the Buick Skylark. When the V6 engine, the compact size, and the ample room were pointed out, they were amazed at how much sense the Skylark made.
Isn't that amazing?
I am bowled over.
And when the famous Buick ride, comfort, and road manners came to their attention, they were quick to see how much fun a Skylark could be.
Gee, that looks like fun.
Oh, you're not just whistling.
They were so overjoyed with their Skylark, they stopped the car, ran up to the first person they saw, hugged him, and kissed him.
I'm going to hug him.
I'm going to kiss him.
Which might not make much sense, but it certainly was fun.
Hey, ma'am, what's for dinner? Hey, ma'am, what you got?
What's for dinner? ShopRite has a great selection for picnics, barbecues, and indoor meals. ShopRite's Choice Grade Beef Sale features semi-boneless chuck pot roast for 77 cents a pound. Boneless chuck roast, 77 cents a pound. Fresh ground chuck for your burgers, 77 cents a pound. Shoulder for London broil, $1.37 a pound. And there's more. Herod beef franks, 69 cents a pound. C&C Cola, half gallon, 59 cents. See your ShopRite newspaper ads for more values. There's a lot more for a little less every day at ShopRite.
She loves the family. She wants the best. She does all that she can do. She lets ShopRite do the rest. Hey, ma, what's for dinner? ShopRite has the answer.
People who love their sandwiches will tell you singles from Kraft give you quality and value.
When we barbecue, we invite a name we can trust. The name is Kraft Singles, and we trust those individually wrapped American slices for quality, value, and flavor. For burgers, outdoors, or in, trust Kraft Singles.
Kraft American Singles processed cheese food slices. When it comes to sandwiches, you put us on top, America.
And America spells cheese, K-R-A-F-T.
Kraft. The name means value. And here's another one.
Back in 1910, if you were up real early, you might see J.L. Kraft delivering his fresh natural cheese from his horse-drawn wagon. You'll still see that wagon symbol of freshness on every Kraft Cheddar and Colby package. For cooking or snacking, mild flavored or extra sharp, look for the cheese with the wagon. Kraft Cheddars and Colbys, fresh like when J.L. delivered them every day. America spells cheese, K-R-A-F-T, Kraft.
Conversation, you will admit, is usually limited to the exchange of ordinary information. We talk about the weather and rising prices, an invitation, children. Ordinary everyday subjects talked over and over again without much change. Then something unusual happens. Someone you know is a lottery winner. Or your son or daughter comes home and says, I'm married. Or out of the blue, you open the door and there, to your surprise, is a friend you haven't seen for years. And that's what's happening to Laura Vere.
Yes, yes. Come in.
Min!
Hello, Laura.
Why, Min Wilkins! I have never been so surprised.
It's been several years.
Come on in, come in. Oh, now, let me look at you. Why are you here? Are you still living in Lowell? How's Carol?
Years. This room's the same and you ain't changed, Laura. I always liked the room. Thought about you a lot.
Oh, I wrote you several times after you and Clyde left the cave.
I know. I was never much at writing.
Well, when I didn't hear from you, I was afraid that somehow I'd offended you.
Oh, no, no, nothing like that. No. We were friends from when we were girls. And even after you married Will and I married Clyde, whom Will didn't care much for.
Well, we remain friends. Tell me, what brought you back to Chatham? Is Clyde with you?
Oh, no, no. I'm all alone.
Are you staying? Because if you are...
No, no, I'm not staying. I just came to see you.
Oh, Min. I am so happy that you did.
And Chatham. The lighthouse and the beach and the school and... Oh, just the town and how I remember it.
How's Carol?
Married to a nice man named Thompson, which was good to get her away from that house.
Oh, does that mean that Clyde and...
Oh, Clyde is cruel, Laura.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Is he still working at
that... Oh, no, no. He went to Boston because he found work. But then he took another job, and now he's kind of a handyman.
Min, I'll prepare some tea.
Oh, no, please. You like my suit?
Oh, yes, it's very nice. Checks are very becoming.
Carol bought it for me.
She lives in Lowell?
No, no, in Boston. She's never in Lowell. Will you come to visit me, Laura? It's a nice town.
Oh, sure. Of course.
Next week?
Well, I suppose I can get away. Is it urgent? Is something the matter, Min?
Well, it's the bequests and that sideboard from my mother you always liked.
Pardon me? I don't understand.
Well, the sideboard is for you. And the dining room set, which is antique, goes to Carol, along with her old bedroom furniture and the poster bed.
Min!
My silver, which you and Will gave me, and I want my sister to have that. And then there's a cedar chest. And it goes to the neighbor woman who is the widow because...
Min, please stop this talk. Bequests. Now, what kind of talk is that? My goodness, we're the same age and I'm not thinking about dying at 54. Now, you just stop. You just give me the shivers.
It's all in my will.
All right. In 20 years or so, those bequests will be made.
I hid it.
Wasn't that foolish?
Oh, no. It's under a lot of money, and it's what my father gave me and what I saved.
Now, Clyde doesn't know about it.
Oh, no, no. Only me and you.
Min, I think you should confide in Carol.
You'll find it and take care of everything, Laura.
Min, just let me prepare some tea.
No, thank you. You do like my suit.
Oh, yes, very much. The jacket isn't too tight, is it? Does it rub against your throat?
No. Oh, because of the red circle, you mean?
Yes.
Well, it's an allergy made the circle on the neck.
An allergy to what?
Well, I guess you might say gold.
Min talked in a strange way, Will, and all she could talk about were bequests. It was spooky.
Min? Oh, I always found her pretty down to earth. Even after she married that good-for-nothing Clyde Wilkins. For your sake, I was sorry Min moved away, but nobody misses Clyde. Silent, disagreeable man. Is he working?
Uh-huh, as a carpenter. She wants me to visit her next week.
What for? Next week?
Oh, for old time's sake. You know, I don't really want to go, but I feel obligated. Can you drive me up?
Why not? Real estate's slow right now, and Betty can handle anything that comes in. Sure. You name the day, and I'll loaf around Cambridge.
Oh, thank you, Will. I really don't want to go.
Her visit upsets you, didn't it?
Talk about death is always gloomy, telling me who gets what when she dies and where she's hidden her will, the money.
What's that?
I don't want to bore you with all that she said.
No, I'd like to hear. I'm not so sure you should pay her a visit. She sounds a little crazy.
Oh, wait till you hear.
By the way, how'd she get here? Drive?
No. I said goodbye and walked out with her, but there was no car in the driveway.
Bus? There aren't many scheduled trips from Boston, Laura. She must have come by car.
Well, isn't that funny? I have no idea how she got here.
Laura?
Yes, Will?
I work all day.
Oh, come on. You played golf this afternoon, Will. Don't try to fool me. Now, let me see the mail.
And you took a nap.
And why not? I missed the postman, I admit, but it's mostly junk mail. Well, look here. Look at the return address.
Carol Thompson. Who's she?
Min's married daughter.
Oh, sure. Carol. And married. She was a nice girl. Well, what does Carol have to say?
Probably thanking me for her mother's visit. Min's no writer. Let me see. Dear Mrs. Vere, as a dear friend of my mother, she would want you to know. Will.
What's the matter?
Read. Read what Carol says.
Friend of mother's would want. You know that she died on the 2nd of the month and was buried privately 2 days later. I am married and... Wait a minute. Min Wilkins died on the 2nd of the month, and this is the 15th, and you say she visited you 3 days ago?
She did. She sat right here in this living room, and she remembered liking it and talked about bequests. Oh, Will.
Now, take it easy. Catch your breath.
You don't believe me.
Well, how can I?
But, Will, it's true.
No, it can't be true, Laura. The woman was dead and buried 3 weeks ago. She couldn't have called on you just 3 days ago.
But she did. I can see her now sitting right there in that chair in her new check suit.
You dreamed it.
No, Will, I did not.
Darling, it had to be a dream or a nightmare or something.
Will, I could see her sitting there and talking in an odd way, preoccupied with death. I swear it's true, Will.
Now, make sense, Laura. What you're saying is impossible to believe.
Will, oh, my God, what am I going to do?
You're going to forget the whole thing. The bequests, Carol, Clyde Wilkins, all of it. Oh, we'd better talk to Lem Regan.
I don't need a doctor.
Okay, then forget what you dreamed.
I didn't dream it. Min Wilkins was here.
Well, that takes care of the letter from Min's daughter.
Will, I need her address.
No. No, please. I won't have you writing and upsetting her. This closes the subject. Now, let's forget it.
Carol?
Yes? What is it, Father?
Who telephoned? I have a right to know. I pay the bill. Who was it?
Mrs. Laura Vere.
What's that old busybody want? She called from Chatham?
Uh-huh.
I wish I'd answered. I'd tell her where to head in.
Oh, Mrs. Vere is an educated, kind woman. She was Mother's best friend, and she was always nice to me. Or have you forgotten?
What'd she want?
She thanked me for writing to her.
You did? What about?
Mother's sudden death. I've written to her other friends, too.
Less said about it, the better.
I think she's coming up for a visit.
No, she isn't. I don't want to hear.
You don't have to see her. I will.
I thought you was going home. You got rid of all Min's clothes and her other junk.
I'll leave as soon as the movers have come and gone. The bedroom said I had as a girl. Mrs. Vere said Mother told her that I was to have it.
When did your mother say that? She ain't seen this stuck-up friend for years.
She saw her a few days ago. Mrs. Vere said Mother left a will.
Oh, yeah? That's news to me. A will? That's got to be read out by a lawyer. She couldn't afford that.
What about the dining room set? It's an antique and Mother wanted me to have it.
So you say.
You're selling the house and moving into...
Yeah? Moving into where? Go ahead, say it. I know what you're thinking. Now, I don't want to hear no more about Miss Vere and your mother's will when there isn't one. You grabbing this and that. Good night.
She described the suit I gave to Mother, the check suit. How could she know about that suit?
She couldn't. Your mother hadn't seen her for years.
Mother visited Mrs. Vere a few days ago.
Get out, Carol. Go home before I lose my temper.
Mrs. Vere swears she talked to Mother a few
Have
days
ago. Have you lost your mind? Your mother's been dead and buried for over 3 weeks. Let her rest in peace.
I don't see how she could.
As Samuel Johnson said to Boswell, it is still undecided whether or not there has ever been an instance of the spirit of any person appearing after death. All argument is against it, but all belief is for it. That may be the problem here. Did a woman 3 weeks dead visit a friend only a few days ago? We'll unravel the problem a little more when I return shortly.
True Value Hardware stores think there should be 60 feet in every yard. So they're offering the TruTest 60-foot vinyl garden hose for your yard for just $6.99. Hi, Pat Summerall with the details. It's 60 feet long to make it easier to water your lawn, trees, shrubs, garden, or even wash your car. It's nylon reinforced to withstand wear and tear. It stays flexible in all temperatures, strong in the hot sun. You can shut it off at the nozzle without fear of bursting. And its solid brass couplings won't rust. Get the TruTest 60-foot nylon reinforced vinyl hose with 5/8 inch inside diameter for just $6.99. Or choose the TruTest 60-foot rubber hose from True Value Hardware Stores. It's made of strong flexoline rubber that coils easily at low temperatures. And it's reinforced for 575-pound burst strength. See the complete selection of TruTest garden hoses exclusively at participating True Value Hardware Stores and home centers. True Value, more than just a name, their way of doing business.
It's possible to have a dream which is so vivid that you would swear it happened, or that you knew it would happen. That's why a person says to himself, I know that this has happened to me. I know I've been here before, or that face is very familiar. Mrs. Vere had a visit from her old acquaintance, Mrs. Wilkins. Or was it a visitation? It had to be the latter. Who could believe Mrs. Vere?
Laura, I really wish you wouldn't go up to Lowell.
I have to. Will you still drive me up?
I don't have a choice, do I? Besides, now that you've talked to Carol, I don't want you going into that house alone. Wilkins is sure to be ugly.
I am not afraid of Clyde Wilkins.
You'd better be.
Oh? Why?
If you still insist that Min Wilkins came to visit...
She did. I didn't dream it, Will.
And you saw an apparition. The woman was dead, Laura.
I suppose so. But I don't believe in ghosts.
Neither do I, but say it was a ghost. Why did it appear to you?
I don't know. unless it appeared to tell me something.
What do you think that might be?
Well, a warning of some kind?
Perhaps that men didn't die a natural death.
Well.
I mean it.
Men was murdered?
Do you know what caused the death? Did Carol tell you?
No.
Clyde Wilkins is a mean, devious man.
Well, but he'd never commit murder.
You can't say that about anyone, my dear. Now, here's my point. If men... Now, don't interrupt, please. If men appeared to you, it was for a purpose.
Well, all right.
She invited you to visit in Lowell.
Right.
Where you'd become entangled with Wilkins.
Well, I'll just tell him about men's visit.
He won't be as understanding as I am about what she said, Laura. That's why I'm going with you.
Will, you make me feel afraid.
Well, if Clyde murdered men and you suspect him, you should be afraid. If he didn't, he'll still be abusive. Either way, it won't be a pleasant visit. That's why I'll ask Lem Regan to go with us.
Why a doctor?
He's also the official police doctor. And he has a permit to carry a gun.
Well, I must say, Laura, it's about as strange a story as I've ever heard.
Lem, it's the truth.
Well, let's say it's the truth as you see it.
You doubt men's appearance, Will?
Well, to be honest, and without meaning to offend my dear wife, of course... Don't you?
Well, I don't believe men visited Laura because, realistically, it was impossible. Still, Laura insists that she did. And then there's the matter of the bequests.
I don't follow that.
Well, Laura's been very specific about them. What goes to this person and that, you know, like that.
Well, maybe. But Laura's known men all their lives. Laura's always liked that sideboard. I'm sure she heard men talk about what she wanted Carol to have.
A subconscious catalog of who gets what when she dies. Correction, now that men is dead. You do agree with that, don't you, Laura?
That men is dead? Yes. Carol said so. Now, say that Will is correct. No, I won't say it. I couldn't have known about that.
What?
Just skip it.
Have you remembered something else?
I'd rather not say.
Why not? It might be important.
I think it is.
Well, then...
No, I'll tell both of you later. For now, it's my secret.
Why are you being so mysterious?
Will, you've been indulging me. And Lem's just being polite. But he doesn't really believe that men called on me. Well, you'll see. Both of you. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'll check the upstairs and the kitchen.
What was that all about?
You know something, Will? I'm convinced.
Well, I'm not. It's nerves. Or she had a bad scallop.
No, Laura's in good health, and there isn't a bad scallop anywhere around here. No, I'm convinced of something else. Your theory.
If you accept the mad premise of the visit, it could make sense. You remember Clyde Wilkins? Not a trustworthy man. He could have murdered her.
If she was murdered, we don't know, but I think that Laura does.
Carol, my dear.
Hello, Mrs. Vere. Come in. He's... not here.
Thank you for seeing me, Carol.
Oh, I'm so glad you telephoned and came up. I'm fascinated by what you told me. My father wasn't, of course.
What a nice house Min had.
Did you drive up alone?
No, Will drove me. And Dr. Regan, you remember him from Chatham?
Oh, sure. Why didn't they come in?
Well, if your father had been...
Oh, I get it. Your troops.
Will was afraid that...
Sure. Father would be sure to be nasty, but he wouldn't harm you.
Your father must think I'm deluded. Do you?
Well, I don't know what to think. You can't have seen Mother in the past week.
Carol, I did. If you don't believe that, why did you permit me to come up?
Well, say it's because there's no way you could have known about that check suit. It was new. I bought it for her at Easter.
A patterned green check on gray wool with a pleated skirt and a jacket with small notched lapels.
That's it.
And a white blouse with a plunging neckline. Men look very nice. You have very good taste, Carol.
And you saw her. You must have. May I ask what you talked about?
Well, your mother did the talking.
Was she sad?
Yes. Strange, and yes, I thought she looked and sounded sad.
Oh, it's been hard for her. There's a neighbor. A widow.
Carol, let me ask you a question. Was your mother allergic to any kind of metal, say to gold?
Not that I know of.
Well, when she visited me, there was a red half circle around her neck. From a gold choker, she said.
A red half circle?
Angry looking. Can you explain it?
Not so you'll believe it, Mrs. Beer.
I am ready to believe anything. I even think I know what you're going to say. Did Min die an unnatural death, Carol?
She was murdered.
I thought so. Someone cut her throat.
Yes.
Your father?
I don't know. You didn't read about it? Oh, no, of course you didn't. We hushed it up as best we could. The verdict was suicide.
You don't believe that, Carol.
Oh, I'd like to, but no. Mother'd never do that, and that way. No, someone murdered her.
If the police think that...
Oh, they asked a lot of questions, of course, and picked up one hoodlum for questioning.
The motive.
I know. My father and the neighbor woman, but I don't want to think that. He'd been a miserable husband to her, but murder, that's too much.
The widow could be one motive. And there's another, Carol.
What is it?
The will.
Oh, the bequest.
More than that.
Oh?
Much more than that. Now, I can't tell you until I've talked to my husband and to Dr. Regan.
Why not?
If your mother's secret became known, there could be more violence.
Sneaked her in behind my back.
Your supper's on the kitchen table.
I told you I didn't want that Miss Via in my house.
How could I turn her away?
Easy. Tell her to go away.
Anything else? I'm leaving.
Did your movers strip the place?
I canceled them.
Is that so? Well, dandy. You don't want your bedroom set?
I don't want anything. I've seen the last of this prison and of you.
Dandy. That's gratitude.
Gratitude? You dare use that word after grinding Mother down to nothing? Treating her like a poor relation, leading your double life?
Watch your mouth, Carol.
What? You'll take care of me, too?
Don't tempt me.
You admit it.
I admit nothing.
You murdered Mother.
You're a fool. Who put such a notion into your head? That busybody, Miss Veer?
She saw the red half circle on Mother's neck.
She cut her own throat.
I don't believe it.
I don't care what you believe. Subject's closed.
Not if I have my way. Mother's will.
Oh, no, come off it. There is no will.
Yes, there is, and that's why. Night after night, you keep on searching the house from attic to cellar.
Go away, Carol.
And there's something else. Mrs. Veer said so. Some secret of Mother's.
What secret?
I don't know. She was afraid to tell me.
She'd better be. You tell that busybody if she ever shows up here again, I'll cut her throat.
I think you would. She knows that. That's why I think she'll go to the police.
Let her. She'll make a fool of herself.
Or have you arrested for murder.
Ah, there's Laura, Will.
No, I see her. Evening, my dear.
Hello, dear. Did you have any luck?
Well, thanks to Lamb, we had an audience with the police commissioner. And it was an audience.
Yeah, we explained that as friends of Min Wilkins, we had our doubts about her sudden death.
Did you tell him about her visit to me?
No, my dear. Even if Lem and I are a little weak in the head and believe you, the commissioner never would. You know, we skipped Min's visitation and talked hard facts.
What are they?
Well, on the second of the month, Mrs. Wilkins was found in her kitchen with her throat cut.
Oh, who found her?
Clyde Wilkins.
Uh-huh, of course. Now, why didn't they arrest him?
Well, he has an alibi. He was at the Copper Penny Bar with a friend of his, Johnny Moe.
That doesn't mean anything. Now, when was she murdered?
Well, the police doctor places the time of death between 6 and 7 o'clock that night.
Uh-huh. So she was up and around. That's funny. Was there any sign of a struggle?
We asked that. No, it wasn't. The police are inclined to think that Min took her own life.
Well, I don't believe that.
No, I can't say I do either.
What strikes me as odd is why there were no signs of a struggle. Now, Min was awake and dressed. Where was her body found?
In the kitchen.
See, the person who murdered her must have been known to her. It wasn't a stranger. It had to be Clyde. He's a strong brute.
Mm. Yeah, I'd say Clyde, but the alibi
An alibi can be bought, Lem.
Yeah. Well, it's a muddle. It is. The police are letting it die down.
Well, I'm not. Now, there's something I know that I haven't told you.
Let's have it.
Min had a hiding place somewhere in the house. I know where it is because she told me. And I know what she had hidden. The will and a considerable amount of cash hidden with it.
Which Clyde wanted to get his hands on.
Mm.
Lem, does Clyde Wilkins know you?
Well,
would he recognize you?
I don't know. I doubt it. He never was a patient of mine, and I grew this mustache a year ago, so why?
Are you willing to do something illegal?
Laura, what a thing to ask.
You stay out of this, Will. I want to trap the person who murdered my friend.
Well, I'm for that.
The hidden will and the money, those two things are what somebody's afraid will be found by me.
I said you'd be in danger if you didn't drop this fool investigation.
I know that. I admit that I was afraid about Clyde. Now it's Clyde and two others, Will. One of them murdered Min, and I want that person caught and charged.
We're following a trail which may lead to the person who murdered Minnie Wilkins. What's unusual is that the pursuer, Laura Vere, insists that Minnie visited her weeks after Minnie was dead and buried. Is that credible? Ours is an age of science, and we have dismissed the idea of ghosts. But legends persist, and perfectly normal persons have seen things, heard them, felt a chill wind in a closed room. So, we will go on with Act Three shortly.
This is Howard Cosell. Articulate as I am about other matters, like most people, I don't know about CB radio, so for everyone, I question General Electric. Their answers manifest indisputable evidence that GE is expert in CB. Listen to the words of John Casey, GE CB product planner.
John has GE CB. Any features I won't find on every brand?
You bet, Howard. Many units have an antenna warning indicator that tells if you're transmitting enough power.
Several linebackers of my acquaintance could use that.
It also tells if your antenna's hooked up properly, and then there's our channel priority feature that monitors any channel you select, and our switchable automatic noise limiter.
Some might say I'd benefit from that. But seriously, John, that's some list.
Special features, another reason to buy GE CB. This is Howard Cosell saying GE, the name to buy. INCB.
Hi, I'm Ruth Brooks, and I have something very important to tell you. I cater to the discriminating women who want to save money on exciting current fashions by famous designers. At Ruth Brooks, merchandise is put on sale immediately. There is no waiting for end-of-season sales. We have a wide selection of famous brands in sizes 4 to 18. Smashing vested pantsuits, dresses, skirts, slacks, blouses, capes, and ultra suede. For that well-coordinated look, individual attention, and private dressing rooms, see why Ruth Brooks has become the in-place for better shoppers. At Ruth Brooks, our low discount policy saves you up to 50% off the regular retail prices found at all leading department stores. The buys are terrific. Remember, Ruth Brooks Fashions at 3rd Avenue and 66th Street, or 1st Avenue at 84th Street.
Sudden fame is like being shot from a cannon. It rattles the brain. This week in TV Guide, some young TV performers tell how they cope with the problems that accompany fame and talk about one of their colleagues who couldn't. It's a fascinating look at the dark side of success. In the same issue, Harriet Stratemeyer Adams writes about two of her favorite subjects, Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys. The author of the successful books explains why her characters haven't come to life on television until now. This week's cover story looks at the growing pains on Walton's Mountain. Success has brought its own kind of problems to the Waltons. After 5 years on the air, the adults are getting restless and the kids are, well, just not kids anymore. Read about the predicament this week in TV Guide's cover story. America's biggest selling magazine, on sale everywhere.
What is a ghostly presence? Some say it's the thought shell of an earthbound mind. Or to simplify it, put it this way. It's a record left in the air, in space, by passions existing in the past. Some persons may have the ability to see apparitions to whom they appear and are very real. Some, like those who possess extrasensory perception, are receptive to those airborne passions existing in the past and can make them materialize. Well, so be it. That's what we're dealing with here. It is the next morning, and Dr. Lem Regan rings the doorbell of Clyde Wilkins' house.
Yeah? What you want?
Gas company. I come to read the meter.
Oh. Well, I'm just going off to work.
Oh, it won't take long.
All right, well, then come in and hurry it up.
I can close the door behind me.
No, none of that. I stay till you go.
Okay. The door of the basement.
There. Off this hallway. Haven't you been here before?
Oh, sure, sure. The lady used to leave the downstairs basement door open, but it's locked, so I...
Okay, get it over with.
Hop in, Lem.
Yeah.
Duck down and get rid of that jacket, Lem.
All right. Oh.
Everything go all right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it worked perfectly.
You found the hiding place.
I'll never understand how you knew where it was, Laura, but I found it and planted your note. Now... What next?
Well, I think I know what's going to happen.
Not another visit from an apparition.
No, this is just common sense. You'll see. I want to get to a telephone and speak to Carol.
I hope she'll cooperate.
She will. You can bet your boots Carol wants her mother avenged.
Well?
Well, what?
I never thought I'd see you again.
I'd like to speak to you. Okay, if I come in.
Come ahead.
Where's Miss Veer?
How should I know? Back in Chatham, I suppose. What do you want to know?
I wish you'd talk to her for me.
No way. You hate her.
No. No, I don't. I only said she's a busybody, and she is. But I got to find something out. She said there was a will... That your mother had some things written down about...
Bequests, yes. You didn't believe her.
The old frump knows something.
What's so important about the will? Keep everything for yourself. Maybe the widow will want them.
There's money there, Carol.
Where?
Your mother squirreled away money somewhere in the house, probably where she hid the will.
So that's what you've been looking for.
Not the will, the money. And you want Mrs. Fear to tell you where to look. That's the last thing she'd do.
She'd tell you?
Maybe she would. Or maybe she's already told the police.
Huh? What for?
It's an unsolved murder. But the police don't give up. They'll get the person who murdered Mother.
I'll give you half the money, Carol.
Half of what? You don't even know if there is money or how much.
Min got a chunk from your grandfather. Maybe $7,500. And she hid away maybe another $2,500. You could use $5,000. So could I.
She wouldn't leave it to you.
The money's mine.
We'll see about that.
He won't even get into the house.
The police can.
Why do you keep bringing up the police?
Do you think they're satisfied that someone unknown murdered Mother?
Carol, look. Half the money. You can have all that broken-down furniture. You call Miss Via. There's cash money somewhere in the house.
Your dowry for the widow.
Oh, lay off. We're friends, all.
Oh, it's nice to have one, isn't it?
You are a mighty bitter person. It's not natural.
I think the shoe's on the other foot. I care about the murder. You only care about that money. I hope it's never found.
I'll find it, all right, without any help from Via or from you.
You remember Mr. Veer, dear?
Of course. Hi, Mr. Veer.
How attractive you are. This is Dr. Regan.
Oh, of course. I remember the poison oak.
My goodness, that was many years ago.
Carol, please sit down.
Well, I wondered if I'd hear from you again, Mrs. Veer. You were so mysterious the last time we talked.
Yes, I was. It's dangerous to suggest that someone is a murderer.
I did tell my father you thought maybe he'd murdered my mother.
Someone did. We know that. I want to catch that person. But we need your help.
I'll do anything.
Now, you won't be in danger, Carol. Dr. Regan's a police official, and we've spoken to the police in Boston and in Lowell. We're cooperating with them.
My father has an alibi for the night of the murder. So is Johnny Moe.
Well, we know that, Carol, but somebody's guilty, and Mrs. Veer has worked out a scheme to trap whoever did it.
It was the money, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, your mother hid a substantial amount of cash, and we know where it is. I know it's hard to believe, but your mother told me about the hiding place.
And I confirmed it this morning and left a note in the hiding place.
You did? Mm.
Now, Laura, from the beginning, tell Carol what we wanted to do.
I'm going to tell you where the money is hidden.
But that's just what my father wants to know. He came to see me this noon, and he wants me to talk to you about...
Of course. Now, listen carefully. Everything depends on you, Carol. You have to give a performance. Depending on how well you perform, we'll not only recover the money, we'll trap a killer.
Well, my unnatural daughter, I thought you'd never want to see me again.
I don't.
Then run along. I'm going out to eat.
You don't care about the money?
What's that? Come in. Well?
You wanted me to telephone Mrs. Veer.
You did? You come to your senses?
She said she'd tell me where the $10,000 are hidden if you'd make me a promise and keep it.
My word.
She doesn't think so.
What's the promise the old bat wants me to make?
Can I trust you?
What a question. I'm your father.
$10,000 is a big nest egg, and with the sale of the house...
What do you want? I already offered you half the money if we found it. You don't get no more.
I want your help to find out who murdered Mother.
What are you talking about? That's up to the police, and they've dropped the investigation.
Oh, no, they haven't.
Someone who knew her smashed her on the head and cut her throat and left.
Johnny Moe and me was at the Copper Penny.
From what time on?
Well, you read it in the papers. What is all this? Why are you rating it all up?
Who got to the Copper Penny first? You and Johnny didn't come in together.
Well, so what?
Did you know that a neighbor of the widow's saw Johnny's car in her driveway around 5 o'clock?
That's a lie.
You don't know about the widow and Johnny? The handsome Johnny who's 10 years younger than you are?
That won't work, kid. Johnny was with me from 5:30 on. Now you listen to me. The widow's a good woman. I'm going to marry her.
You mean you're going to buy her? Why would she pick you when there's Johnny?
Watch it. You think you're smart. The education. Yes. But you're dumb, Carol. Real dumb. That slap in the face is nothing. You tell me where that money is or I'll wring your neck.
Not cut it.
Where's the money hidden? Tell me, or so help me.
All right. But I have to show you.
Tell me where it is. I can find it.
No. No, not until you promise to put up half the money as a reward to find the murderer.
You're crazy.
I mean it. Unless I tell you where it is, you'll never find it. And if you kill me, you'll never know.
Okay. $5,000 for the reward. I don't mind. Nobody'll ever collect it. Now, talk.
When he slapped Carol, I almost opened the door.
He's a dirty brute.
He'll break. You got your revolver, Lim?
Yeah, ready. There was a good guess about John Moore. Oh, shh, shh. Not a sound. Not a sound. They can't see us.
Looks like a warehouse down here. Oh, there he is.
All right. Now, where's the hiding place? Come on.
Let go of my arm.
You're lucky I don't break it. Where is it?
Lift down that box up there.
What? That's an old Christmas tree stand. Busted. Should have been thrown out years ago.
That's where the money is.
I got it. Now, cut the string. An oilskin bag.
It's in there. Here, let me...
Keep your hands off. Look, Carol. The money.
What's that envelope?
Huh? Well, she's written on it. For Carol. Birth certificates and will. Junk. Here.
How much is there?
Buckets. Wouldn't her old man spin in his grave if he saw me now? His money, and it's mine.
This envelope, it's got a note in it. To whom it may concern. I expect to die a violent death. Clyde, Johnny Moe, and the widow plan to kill me for this money. Clyde won't do it. He's yellow. It will be Johnny or the widow who does it. The one that don't have an alibi. Clyde is a dumb fool. The widow is Johnny's woman. They'll double-cross him.
Give me that!
Don't move, Clyde.
What?
I'm a police official. Dr. Regan, hand over that piece of paper.
Laura, you...
You murdered men.
No. No, honest, no. Me and Johnny...
have alibis, and that leaves only one person who could have murdered men. Your neighbor. The widow.
Was she... The note? How did men know?
The police have her in custody, Mr. Wilkins. And experts are searching her house and examining her clothing for bloodstains. You'd better talk.
The three of you conspired to commit this crime. And all of you will go to prison for life.
Thanks to an apparition. The apparition of Min Wilkins, who visited Mrs. Veer. Who's now avenged her foul murder.
Perhaps in time, the three who conspired to murder Min Wilkins would have been apprehended. But passing time covers events with the dust of fading memories, and an unsolved murder would have been forgotten. except for that apparition. Min came back from the grave to arouse her friend Laura Vere. A story of the macabre. I'll return shortly.
Some vacation, huh, Margaret?
Right.
2 glorious weeks.
11 stuffy motels.
2,000 wonderful miles.
17 public restrooms.
A great trip.
Thanks to Lysol spray.
Summer means stuffy motels, public restrooms. Summer means it's time for Lysol spray. Lysol disinfectant spray kills germs other people leave on surfaces in public restrooms. Kills athlete's foot fungus on shower floors, too. And takes stuffy odors out of the air. Take Lysol along. Summer means it's time for Lysol spray.
Why is Bank AmeriCard becoming Visa?
Coming, going, changing, growing. The things that make up life.
America, you've been changing. You do more, travel more, demand more of life. Today, you need money that's good not only around the corner, but wherever life takes you. That's why Bank AmeriCard is becoming Visa, the most widely recognized card in the world, to keep up with you. Now, all across America, and in 117 countries around the world, there's Visa.
New York, Oregon.
Visa card arrives. Bank AmeriCard is still good as gold. But soon, around the world, it'll be Visa. We're keeping up with you.
We've come full circle from the appearance of a specter to the arrest of a murderous trio because Laura Vere possessed information that was impossible for her to attain. How did she acquire it? Out of thin air. Say she was attuned to it. All we know is that Mrs. Vere was avenged. Our cast included Ann Petoniak, Robert Dryden, Catherine Byers, and Joe Silver. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Tonight's WOR Mystery Theater was also brought to you in part by ShopRite Supermarkets, where you get a lot more for a little less. The preceding program was furnished by CBS Radio.
It's the white collar, the heart's two-in-one collar that kills both ticks and fleas.
This summer, don't let ticks and fleas make your pet suffer. Put a heart's two-in-one collar on your dog or cat now. Don't let ticks and fleas get a free ride into your home. Put a heart's two-in-one collar on your pet now. To kill ticks and fleas, the right collar is the white collar.
Get the white collar, the heart's two-in-one collar. It kills both ticks and fleas.
Garbage in, garbage out. They say computers are like that. Whatever you put in them, you get back out of them. Computers do not create. They merely mindlessly spit out what other people program and insert into them in the first place. And that's the way your mind is. Your mind has never come up with one concept that was not the result of a lot of other concepts, conceptual material, facts, data that you put into your mind. No human mind is anything more than like a library, a repository on which books are stored. It is the sum total of that collection of all material that came into that mind through the five senses. Now, you've got a marvelous retrieval system there which doesn't always spew out the filth. Vomit in, vomit may stay a while. Filth in, it may stay there. Pornography, slop, filth. The hedonistic, materialistic society in which you live that now exploits teenagers and little children in a multi-million dollar child pornography industry is putting slop and filth into thousands and tens of thousands of young, impressionable minds, which is so searing those minds, so destroying those minds, so rendering those minds always and forevermore perverted that it's unbelievable. And yet people still talk about what is socially redeeming, what is beneficial, what is supposed to be your constitutional right, freedom of expression, creativity, all of these words which justify the most prurient kind of filth and claim that it's a victimless crime, even if it is a crime. You know, your brain is marvelous. Once you record something in it, it's always seemingly there. And certain stimuli can recall those images into your mind and sometimes flash them into your consciousness at the most unsuspected moments. Thoughts, memories, things which had come into your mind will suddenly be there right in the front of your head, and you wonder, well, where did that thought come from? I'll tell you one thing. The more these people are searing their minds with the filth of this age of total slop and trash in literature, of pornography, the more damage they are doing to the most precious and priceless possession they own, which is their own mind. Pornography teaches powerful lessons. It teaches that the highest values are the immediate, personal, animalistic pleasures and urges that enter into a human mind. It teaches you utterly prurient, materialistic, carnal, filthy lessons of get yours while the getting is good, enjoy yourself, it's later than you think, give yourselves over into every filthy, lustful appetite that the human mind can imagine. It teaches that sex is to be used, to be exploited, and without control, and that people are like sex objects. I could not believe my ears or my eyes the other day when a judge sitting on a bench decided that a young teenage boy who had brutally raped a girl was only doing that which came naturally, and then proceeded to rebuke all women for wandering about in short skirts or going braless, because he said they were the real ones who were guilty, not the boy who raped the girl. You know, I've heard some puritanical types reason that way. I'll have to tell you the next time about it, because it's quite an analogy. It tells you what men are made of and what little girls are made of. So you can listen next time on that. But in the meantime, you better pick up the telephone and dial toll-free number for this booklet. Is sex sin? Is sex sin? I mean, I know what the Supreme Court is claiming. I know what various local courts are saying. I know what some judges are deciding. And all this business about constitutional rights and freedom of expression and all of that. But what does God say about this avalanche of pornography? What does God say about tiny children being exploited by a booming multi-million-dollar child pornography industry? You ought to read about sex laws, and that they do exist, in his booklet called Is Sex Sin? The number is 800-423-4444. In California, Alaska, and Hawaii, it's area 213-577-5225. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong.
The preceding commentary was sponsored by Garner Ted Armstrong Productions.